Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
I rarely do a tease on this show, but I'm going to this time just because it feels right. No one will ever accuse me of being a professional singer. And yet, in the attempt to follow the kind of advice that I normally give, which is take reasonable, prudent risks, I have written a song that is career-related and will dare to sing it and accompany myself on the piano in a few minutes. Now, if that's not enough to make you change stations, maybe this will. The Bureau of Labor Statistics found that a whopping 40% of U.S. laborers, workers currently, are contingent workers, meaning they don't have the security or benefits of the traditional full-time job. And according to an additional study, this was done by Intuit, said that by 2020, which sounds very far away, but it's really not, we're already in mid-2017, 40% of all jobs are going to be, let me get it right, let me get the exact quote here. Yes. Darn, can't find it. But roughly 40% of jobs could be done of all fields, not just normal, regular workers by 2020. This was a lousy start. Anyway, of course, everyone who works any kind of job is kind of terrified by the idea of robots in the workplace. You know, truck drivers and cabbies, obviously airplane pilots, but even doctors and lawyers don't feel safe from automation. You know, there is this Dr. Watson that IBM's doing that will, not immediately, but not so far in the future, perhaps replace some doctors. Lawyers, so much of the legal work, the discovery, the research is now being done by automated discovery. Even financial managers, Vanguard and Fidelity, are realizing, and something I think you and I have realized all along, that who really likes your local-friendly stockbroker, now they call, you know, account executive. There may well be automated versions that feel more trustworthy, more expert. No one feels safe from automation. Recent McKinsey studies suggest that 45% of the activities that individuals are paid to perform at work, not the whole job, but part of them, could be automated, 45% with current demonstrated technologies. Then it really even occurs, not just, we're talking about, you know, low-level things like landscape, we're talking about even, according to the McKinsey study, that it's actually easier to partially automate the job of a CEO than it is a landscaper. So, but are there any, you know, I never like to bring up a problem unless I'm going to offer some solutions. So here are some. These are, according to CareerCast, I don't take credit nor blame for this one, CareerCast just issued a new report on the best gig economy jobs, and it's named accountant, carpenter, interpreter and translator, multimedia artist, and web developer among the 10. Of course, everybody knows that any job that can be sent over the internet doesn't normally require a person to be in studio, if you will, or in the workplace. They can work at home. But also, you know, jobs like, for better or worse, carpenters, and we imagine all the trades, they're trying, employers in an ever greater attempt to try to avoid paying health care, so whole Social Security, avoid wrongful termination suits, workers' compensation, the rest of it, are hiring people as gigs, you know, with just part-time. So some of the growing areas, software and web developers, but especially web developers, because those are more self-contained. Software developers normally require a lot of interaction. So certainly web developers, if you're good, these days it doesn't take much to be a web developer. The basic skills are so, you know, there's so many prepackaged templates that it's not so hard. But high-level web development is something that is not a bad gig thing if you're willing to live without the healthcare. You've got a spouse who's providing it. Multimedia artists, as I said, like graphic design, for example, you know, at a high level, somebody who's business-oriented but also has graphic design skills, not just graphic design people who, you know, like something that's cool, because companies hire graphic designers and want to pay them well because the graphic design is supposed to increase sales. So if you are a graphic designer who is not averse to and has almost an intuition as to what kind of graphic designs are going to yield more sales and work well with the marketing research department to combine their expertise with yours, that's the kind of job that is going to be gig-oriented. And on the positive side, while kind of denigrating gigs, but while certainly most people like to have the stability of not having to look for a job every few months and like to have coworkers to share stories with and the built-in infrastructure that they know and not have a big on-ramping period, there's some people who love the idea of working for 2 or 3 months and then going to find the guru in Kathmandu or build their boat or practice their flute for their next Peninsula Symphony concert or whatever, like Scheherazade last night. Peninsula Symphony, underrated entity. I really think that these kind of regional, I don't know if regional is the right word, but local symphony orchestras are perhaps the most underrated resource. Why? Because there's such a surplus of great musicians here in the Bay Area that they can get some awesome players, but they charge very little. So you can get, you know, to do it, to see Michael to MTT, you know, you're going to pay $100, $200 for a ticket. And if you go and hear the Peninsula Symphony or the Vallejo Symphony or the East Bay Symphony for $20 or $30, you can get a great seat. And you're not fighting to even get a seat. You could last minute, you can show up and there ain't no problem. But that was a sidetrack, for what it's worth. David LaTulipa is my board op here today, and ever helpful and competent, and like to give him a little shout out. Okay, he is a flutist. It's not a flautist, by the way. That's just French pretense. He's either a flute player or a flutist.
Play the flout.
Right, he doesn't play the flout. Although he may flout certain things, but that's a whole other story. We won't go there. Okay, I'll be good. All right. Another promising career option, only that I briefly mentioned for in the gig economy, is indeed interpreters and translators. People especially, you know, and I'm not just talking about Spanish. Of course, we know this is becoming Latino USA per the public radio show, but and especially Latino California. But certainly we are indeed a mosaic of everybody from people who speak Hmong to Thai to Mandarin to Cantonese to Russian. And so if you are one of those people who can translate, that is, translation is the written, translating the written word, or if you're really good, you're an interpreter, that is, on the fly verbally, there are lots of jobs, which again, a company, you know, like if you, like I use Skype all the time, on Skype you can patch in translators from anywhere. So if somebody in Azerbaijan needs a Russian translator from you can work from here, just like voiceover artists. You know, the voiceover people, like at Voice 123, they can get their gigs even if the gig is based in Zambia. So that's kind of a freelance job to consider. So those are some jobs that I think work well in the gig economy. What I think I want to do is, of course, you know, I was kind of reaching because my heart says that it's really kind of sad that so many people are forced, because employers, and I'm not just talking about corporations here, nonprofits and government are also obsessed with trying to save labor costs, and they, you know, of course the university is the one I like to pick on the most, because they're the ones who are constantly talking about the importance of treating labor fairly and giving living wages and benefits, and they're the first to hire part-time temp professors. The hypocrisy at universities knows bounds, but because they're good liberal institutions, the media gives them a pass. But I won't give them a pass. They don't deserve one. Anyway, but you deserve a pass. That is free career counseling, and you're going to get that right now if you want it. And all you need to do is call in to work with Marty Nemco and KALW. Phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And this is a particularly good time, perhaps. I did write a song, words and lyrics, that acknowledge the following truth. I have been a career and personal coach to over 5,000 people. And the older I get, the more I've been doing it, the more I really have, and this is not one of these typical polite statements, the more I've become humbled. There really are no easy answers. So I wrote a song called The Answers that acknowledges that. And so while we're waiting for your calls to come in, and perhaps even encourage some, to acknowledge that I'm not here to give you pat answers, but acknowledge real-world truths, but hopefully provide baby steps forward. Here is me. I just recorded this 20 minutes just before we went on the air. Me playing the piano and singing the song, The Answers. Should I get high? Should I have sex? Strive for A's or live with C's? Go to college? How far from home? Buy a label or do JC? Far away from parents' eyes? Party down or study up? Follow my bliss? Choose art, not biz? Be real cool or be straight up? God, give me the answers. Or does God live in me? They say the answers do lie within, but where can they be? Where can they be? So I'm a grad and wanna hang, but not fall behind the rest. Take a job or do more school. Opt for balance or be the best. Keep the squeeze or search for more. Go get hitched or cut the chain. Go have kids and keep the wings. Leave the spouse and stay in lane. God, give me the answers. Or does God live in me? They say the answers lie within, but where can they be? Where can they be? Should I retire? Should I look back? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? God, give me the answers. Or does God live in me? They say the answers do lie within, but where can they be? Where can they be?
First attempt at writing a song with lyrics and let alone singing it here for you on KLW, but it does acknowledge that there are no easy answers, but I'll try to provide some answers that may be at least helpful taking a step forward. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, I can usually help. Sometimes a baby step, sometimes a giant step. The phone number here for what I call a workover, no pummeling involved, usually. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Now I'd like to share some careers that are so many people in the Bay Area, as I said, were creatives. You know, they would love a job that doesn't force them to be a drone and do the same old thing all the time and use that creative spirit that lies in so many of us. And this list came was created by CareerBuilder, and they've listed what they call the top 10 creative jobs that the labor market needs that will actually pay you. That's an intriguing title. Let's see if the promissory is kept. Here is their first one. The first one is one that was mentioned earlier about jobs that that can be done in a gig economy, and that is graphic designers. There is a high demand for graphic designers, for good ones, as I said, those that have business expertise. There are currently, and this surprised me, 287,000 graphic designers in the U.S., and they've added 21,000 new jobs since 2011. Pay will vary, but the real professional graphic designer
earns, you know, $45,000, $55,000, $60,000 a year. $60,000, not dollars. Another example of where certainly creative people can find jobs where the labor market actually exists and it'll pay you. And although it does make some people, a lot of artists really hate this, but it's, you know, I'm here to speak the truth. Public relations folks, they work with the media, and whether it be verbally or in writing, to help grow their company, or definitely nonprofits. Nonprofits absolutely have a PR function and use it well. And in fact, because the media is far more sympathetic to a nonprofit than it is to companies, you're actually more likely to get media coverage. There are 237,000 public relations jobs in the U.S., 21,000 new ones since 2011. And again, you're going to earn like kind of this bare middle class living, although in the Bay Area with the price of housing, bare middle class living is $200,000 a year. But you can make in the 50s, 60s when you rise, you know, see public relations executives, you know, if you are the vice president of media relations for United Way or for UC Berkeley, you could easily be making six figures. Another example of one of the top 10 career builder jobs for creative folks that the labor market actually needs, producers and directors. People don't realize that producers are used for not just feature fortune motion pictures in Hollywood, and not just commercials, but so many, and again, staying with the nonprofit theme, because I know so many listeners at KLW, you know, are more motivated to work for a nonprofit than for a company. You know, money is the lifeblood of not just companies, but nonprofits. And they know that people are much more likely to be persuaded by a powerful video at the gala fundraising celebration than some fat cat just giving a spiel. So they make these amazing videos to try to extract maximum dollars from the donors. Well, they all require producers. There's an under-the-radar opportunity that most people don't think about, who dream of making the documentary film that's going to make it to, you know, the Bay Area's film festival. But a more realistic way to live what I describe as Bay Area values would be to be a producer for that kind of context. I have plenty more, but I'd like to give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, I can usually help by doing what I call a workover. The price is certainly right. Zero, zippo, nada. Where are you? What are you listening to? Work with Marty Nemko. You can call right now. We've got lines available. This is a good time to call. So, need some help? 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. More creative careers. Careers for creative types. Interior designers. If you do have an eye for turning rooms from ducklings into swans, interior designers are not just in charge of changing colors and lighting and furniture. Unlike an interior decorator, the interior designer can actually, working along with architects, move walls, change sconces, change all kinds of physical characteristics, so you are really kind of an intermediate. You get to wear some of the architect's hat as well as some of the interior decorator's hat. There are 93,000 of them in the United States, 10,000 of them new since 2011. So while, yes, any creative field is going to be a lot tougher to get a job than just being a functionary accounts payable manager for Visa, but there are 93,000 people in the United States who have successfully gotten that job. So, all right. Let's give it the phone number one more time. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko for a workover, 415-841-4134. Now let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, Marty.
Hello.
Hi. My name is Tim.
Hi, Tim.
And I'm looking for full-time work.
Okay.
And let's see. My passion is building teams.
Yeah.
I'm really love to facilitate collaboration. I'm really good at listening to people.
Okay, very soft skill. Do you have any technical or content-based expertise to go along with that?
So, a couple things. I've started two different businesses.
Okay.
And I also actually currently work as a technology consultant, and I have experience in a variety of tech fields, from knowledge management, IT work, network administration. I've done different things in the tech field.
Okay, what were the businesses you started?
One was a preschool based on mindful communication.
Okay.
And one was a worker-owned bakery. It's actually a chain of bakeries.
Okay, kind of like a Nabilum or a cheese board or those kind of places.
Exactly.
Okay. So, normally the best shot is integrating those components. Now, given that you've got some expertise on the IT side, that's where places, let's say, like preschools or bakeries, for example. Of course, you could apply to many other entities, but there is this what's called face validity. They're going to trust you more. They're going to feel, well, if he's run a preschool before, he's going to know more about the ins and outs of a preschool. Or if he started a chain of bakeries, he's going to be able to, understand the ins and outs of everything. The baking, the people, the hours, middle of the night, the inventory, the theft, the inventory control, stealing bagels or whatever. So if I said that you need to try to target the small, not large, I'm not talking about Pepperidge Farm, but small chains of bakeries that are in the Bay Area, pitching them as whether you're going to be, I would think that most people who go into baking or run baking businesses are not IT lovers. They're more interested in baking and serving and local sustainable organic food and all the rest of it. What if I said you want to be the IT consultant for those on a consulting basis and as needed basis? You may not be able to do it yourself. If the job is too complicated, you can bring in some people and quickly, on the fly, build up a team to create their IT infrastructure or whatever. What do you like and not like about that idea?
Yeah, it sounds appealing in terms of having a target, like a focus that I could target on, I could focus on. I guess I'm just concerned about the amount of work there would be in that area. Like most of when I've been looking at some of this team building work in technology.
Not team building. I don't want the team building is, again, that's seen as frou-frou fluff stuff.
Yeah.
No, I'm asking you to build the team. Let's say I am a bakery. I've got 3 or 4 locations in the Bay Area. I've got to have some kind of an inventory management or a payroll system or some kind of an IT solution or customer database or using Constant Comment to keep after them and lettering people no sales or social media marketing. I need a strategy that integrates Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. That's not my core expertise. So there comes Tim, who's going to come in and audit what's really needed, play like a systems analyst, figure out what's needed, and then you probably can't do it all yourself. That's where you build the team to come in and create that technology infrastructure for that company and then train the staff, and then you're on to the next one and you build another team as needed for the next job. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I like it. And I also have a lot of contacts in the field. I think I could definitely get people together.
Awesome. Send me a croissant.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Are you talking to me?
I am.
Oh, wow. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
My name is Ruth. I live in San Francisco. I'm calling for another person who has been looking for a job. She paid a whole lot of money to a career counselor.
Right.
And the career counselor has been completely focused on resume writing.
Ugh, that's
and she
ridiculous.
Doesn't want to read what the person writes. She wants to sit down with the person and write it together. And
sure.
It's being really frustrating. Here's my question. She's getting a lot of interviews and not getting the jobs. She's getting a lot of interviews and not getting offers. Do you think the problem is the resume or something else?
Usually the resume is the least of it. Frankly, low-level career counselors take great comfort in structure. So they like to give the Myers-Briggs or the Strong, or they help people with the resume because it's a very technical task.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the key to getting a job, 70, depending on the study, 70 to 80% of jobs are gotten not through your resume, or not through answering ads, but by either creating or building on existing connections, even if you're making cold calls. So getting, just like I help
help that previous caller come up with a compelling proposition for where his unique combination of attributes make him a compelling proposition to a certain subset of employers, the really wise career counselor helps tease out what is that unique combination of a person's attributes and preferences, and then says, who are the employers? What is the set of employers most likely to want that? And what's the smartest way to connect with them? Is it to give a talk at a conference? Is it to email them? Is it to answer ads for them? Is it to go to a job fair? Is it to, the resume is the smallest technical task. Most people know that resumes are full of BS, and so they are given very little credibility. Any major company, for example, hires mainly through referral. Google almost never does it through ads. They're getting internal referrals from people. And so, no, the resume is the most overrated tool possible. Get a career counselor who, whether it be me or anybody else, I don't care really, I've got plenty of clients, but a career counselor who is going to be really insightful in teasing out what is that person's best skills, interests, aptitudes, merge that with what's viable in the market, not just one dreamer. Some of these people, they say, oh yes, you can, if you work hard enough, you can be anything. That's bull. But trying to tie what the person's unique attributes are with the job market, and then a customized strategy based on her strengths and weaknesses on how to go about landing that job.
Now, she's in healthcare.
Yeah.
Is there anything different or special about that?
Well, healthcare is, there's a number of niches. The smart money on healthcare is to avoid the obvious, which is being a doctor or even being a registered nurse. Because while they say there's a nursing shortage, in reality, it's really only in specialties. I generally, all things being equal, depending upon the person, of course, I am encouraging people, if they're, let's say they're manager types, I'm interested in hospital management. I'm interested in urgent care management. These are more under the radar. If the person is a hands-on person, becoming more of an imaging technologist. MRIs are now old school. There are much more advanced kind of imaging, so becoming an imaging specialist or becoming a respiratory therapist. Those are the kind of more under the radar, or a surgical technologist, who's somebody who assists in the operating room, or an anesthesiology assistant. This is somebody who works alongside the anesthesiologist, or sometimes even on their own, relatively speaking, because they're so much less expensive than an anesthesiologist. See, these under the radar fields are critical in healthcare, and it's beautiful because, unfortunately, boomers are aging, and they're much more likely to need the system.
An aging person. This is a boomer.
Okay. Well, there's always going to be some measure of age bias. Not so much in healthcare. Certainly in IT and in biotech, there's a bias toward younger people. But if she or he has got the skills, then the job market is not bad for those people in these, under, they call them allied health careers. And that's what I would encourage. Now, do you want to be more specific for this friend of yours, Ruth? Do you want to describe, other than being in healthcare, do you want to describe some of her core skills, attributes, desires, so that I can maybe be more specific?
She's pretty specialized. She's got a very good advanced education from very well-known schools. She's a diabetes educator, which is, it should be a field that's really growing.
Right. Absolutely, unfortunately. Yes, that's true. There's increased obesity in certain populations.
I'm just curious if
you
have a direction about that.
Yeah. This is kind of generic, but it's really true. It is my belief that Kaiser Permanente is and will be the central player in healthcare providing. And also, I do think, notwithstanding what's gone on with Trump and its healthcare, I would bet a lot of money that within 8 years we will have single payer healthcare here. And Kaiser has been long set up to make that happen. So if I'm a diabetes educator, and remember also, Kaiser serves a working class and blue collar population heavily. And that group of people have a high rate of obesity, which of course translates to a high rate of diabetes. Mm-hmm. And they have a great interest in getting people who have diabetes to take their meds, control their diet, control their weight, etc. And therefore, I would be focusing my efforts on Kaiser Permanente as a diabetes educator. That's a simpler process. You don't have to explore broadly. If she is a diabetes educator, And she'd also need to look inward into her soul and say, how good a diabetes educator is she? It's not enough to know the facts. The facts are meaning, you know, are the baseline. She's got to have the magical gift of being able to motivate people to actually lower their A1Cs, to lower their weight, to control their sugar intake, etc. And if not, she's got to work on that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And then if she's one more thing, and then when she's
okay.
applying for a job, when you're an educator, the best-selling tool is not, again, a resume. It would be a video of her doing a very compelling presentation that actually may bring the attendees to tears or totally wrapped in attention. That's going to be more valuable in getting a job than any resume.
Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. All right. I'd like to help you. Whatever you're, whether you're a clerk or a CEO, you're 16 or 76, I can usually help you take a baby step forward by doing what I call a workover. They are free here on KALW and work with Marty Nemko. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Before I go back to the phones, though, I was in the middle of sharing Career Builder's top 10 creative jobs that actually the labor market needs and will actually pay you. Now, artists, art directors, people, everybody wants to be an artist, but if you have the ability to know a number of the different art functions, layout, freehand work, graphic work, 3D, etc., and you also have the ability to manage people well and motivate artist types who may not, you know, some have described managing artists like herding cats, but if you've got that ability, there are certainly art directors are used in everything from magazines to movie productions to major websites. There are 57,000 art directors in the U.S., and they can earn good money. You know, a good art director can earn close to or at six figures here in the Bay Area. So if that's you, there's a way to be a creative person without eating cat food. Let me do one more. Technical writers. Now, I realize that for most people who describe themselves as creatives, their creativity would rather be expressed by writing a play or painting a, you know, splattering paint on a canvas. But technical writers, especially here in the tech-centric Bay Area, there's lots of jobs here. And if you are able to use your creativity to explain complicated topics clearly, that's a great gift. You're going to create instruction manuals, internal documentation for people who are working for the company so that when they have to pick up on what somebody else has done, you have documented the work. They may create how-to articles or blogs. There are 55,000 technical writers in the U.S. Maybe you want to be one of them. Certainly multimedia artists and animators. Now, I am a little nervous about this because I'm seeing ever more of that multimedia animation work go to Toronto, if not the Philippines. But there still are some where at the major companies like the Pixars that like to have people locally so that there can be more in-person collaboration. That's certainly an option for creative people, and it can pay if you have really, this is a very competitive market, so you really need rock star skills. You really need to know, be a Maya expert or whatever the latest animation and multimedia software is. There are 51,000 people who are artists and animators in the U.S. Two more, and then we'll go to the phones. Commercial and industrial designers. These are quite magicians. They combine art and business and engineering. Remember, I had a guest on the show, talking about packaging. They create new products based on what people actually buy. There are 41,000 commercial and industrial designers in the U.S., and packaging is kind of cool. I mean, I really do like that fact that I can, you know, now, for example, just some of the simple little thing like chewing gum. I read a study that said that people who chew gum will actually increase your IQ for 5 or 10 minutes or so because the chewing of the gum is actually increasing oxygenation. You know, your jaw is moving up and down, oxygenation to the brain, and you get a temporary boost in IQ. So I don't know if it's placebo effect, but I will very often before an important meeting or whatever, I'll chew gum. But my point is that I'll often do that in the car on the way to a meeting. And unlike in the old days where they're just packed and had to be unwrapped and it was difficult, they now put the gum in packages that are kind of like the medicine package where you just push it out and it comes as so much easier and there's less waste. It's a very creative job being a packaging person. I buy my coffee instead of some big canister or whatever. There are now these resealable bags that you just open and then reseal, and it's a lot less wasteful, takes up a lot less space. So for you creative types, that's an under-the-radar. It's one of my favorite words. It's an under-the-radar kind of a career for creative types. And finally, film editors. Sometimes, yes, the director, especially in these low-budget, local, you know, short little documentaries, the director edits their own film, but sometimes they don't. And that's when the film editor comes in. Editors, of course, are in charge of cutting all the footage and turning it into the movie or video or commercial that you see on the screen. Another under-the-radar option for creative types. There are 36,000 film editors in the U.S. Maybe you want to be one of them. Now, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko. If you have a question about your work life, need some help, we offer it free. It's my pro bono work I do here at KALW. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's the phone number for what I call a workover, 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
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 I am calling because
I'm hearing a lot of background noise. Are you in a car with a window open? No, hold on.
And I'm in 100% commission only sale.
Okay, I haven't heard anything you said because you've got a lot of wind noise in the back.
I do very well every year, but it's a very doggy dog kind of market. There's lots of agents, and it's a very small niche market. Before that, I went to FITM, and I have a degree in fashion design, and I'm an artist before that. So I'm coming up on midlife here, and I'm thinking that I want to get out of the vicious rat race and go into something salary, something that I have weekends off with my kids, maybe.
Okay, I missed most of the beginning of what you said because you weren't listening
Hello?
At all. Okay, I'm gonna hang up. Call back if you want. We can't hear you because of all the background noise and missed all of that. And so let's go back to the phones. Feel free to call back if you want, but listen, please. Don't just talk. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi. This is Ryan from San Francisco.
That sounds good. Nice and clear, Ryan. How can I help you?
Yeah. So I was curious about your perspective on... I'm currently an investment banker.
Right.
And I was curious about your perspective on making the switch to private equity.
Okay. Well, you know, I always like private equity better than investment banking because, again, I'd rather go to the less competitive market. Investment banking is the first visceral knee-jerk reflex act for a business major who went to a Harvard or a Stanford, etc., where there's definitely private equity. There's a lot of private placements that are – it's just seen as less sexy, so it's less competitive, but there's a ton of it out there. So – if I wasn't really doing very well in the investment banking space, I'd rather go in the private equity space also because it's more creative, it's more custom. Whereas in investment banking, you know, it's your standard go public, you know, get the thing, prop up the price so it can go public, and then you've got the public offering and you get Goldman Sachs or Merrill Lynch to underwrite. In the mid-market, in private equity, you've got many more options, and there's much more creativity. That's my take as an outsider who's known a number of, you know, number of clients in that space. First of all, to what extent does that match your perception?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of does, right? But I think my own perception is that breaking into the PE market is exceedingly difficult if you're not an insider to begin with.
Well, so is private. So is, you know, investment banking. But now my question is, you wouldn't be wanting to get out. What's the reason you want to get out? Let's start there.
Oh, because I've made oodles and oodles of money, and, you know, the lifestyle is just getting to me. So.
Okay, great. So, given that you've made oodles of money, you've obviously accomplished some stuff. You've done good things. So what if I said, you know, and you said you need to have, what I inferred from what you said is that you don't have a big network in the private equity market. And so given that you have a long potential glide path, you've got plenty of time because you've got the money. It's not like you're going to be homeless tomorrow. What if I said the smart thing to do is to first, and we'll start on this together here,
figure out what is the most compelling success story or stories you've had, projects that might be impressive when you try to network your way and try to create a network to net your way into the private equity market. What was your first, what would you say it would be the most one for now, the one most impressive accomplishment that you've had as an investment banker that would impress people with power in the private equity market?
Well, I was part of the team that took that took Snap to IPO.
Okay, great. And what was your role? What was your either particularly clever or dogged contribution to that effort?
The pricing.
You're cutting out now. I didn't hear you say it again.
On where we priced the offering.
I still didn't hear you. Moved into a you're on a cell phone and you moved into an area. I didn't hear it. Would you try it again, please?
Yeah, I said on how we actually priced the offering.
Okay, great. Well, that's, valuation is at the core of it. And so I want you now, as an experiment, in 30 seconds, to explain to me how you went about pricing Snapchat so that that would impress a private equity person that you have really good chops at valuation. Tell me in 30 seconds how you did it.
Oh, we priced based on...
Not
trailing.
We, you. I mean, you said that's what you mainly did. You need to take credit where credit is due, otherwise you're not going to be seen as impressive. What did you do to get really optimized pricing?
Yeah, but again, it was... I mean, I was of the team that did it, right?
What did you do? But you didn't sit there twiddling your thumbs. What did you do?
Oh, I came up with the innovative model on not look at imprints, but look at imprints of imprints.
Okay, great.
For that business model.
So you'll need to explain. Right, I know what you mean. You mean the number of people who second generation. You know, not just the number of people who use Snapchat or who clicked on it, but the end up maybe customers making a buy as a result of clicking on a Snapchat ad. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Okay, so notice how much clearer that is. If you make that was in 5 or 10 seconds. You say, you used a model that was not normally used in valuing Snapchat, which is you didn't just look at the number of impressions, 80 million impressions per month, but rather you were able to come up with a clever way of identifying second generation clicks, which are closer to the monetizing effect of those clicks, and therefore you contributed to having a price of Snapchat where the IPO went in just 3 days, blah, 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 blah. Can you see how that within 20 or 30 seconds is impressive? Can you see how that's one ingredient that will help you get hired in the PE market?
Yeah, I think that sounds cool. That's a good way to look at it.
Right. So your homework assignment is to come up with three such stories and then either figure out who the major people in the PE market. Now, PE, again, is a very broad entity. Is it going to be, I imagine, given that you're talking about apps like Snapchat, I imagine there are smaller apps that are trying to get financing through the private equity market. So I would try to find out who the big players are in the software app private equity market and see how the best way to pitch them with your three stories of your successes, and either whether you're running into them at a conference, being at an angel investor meeting, whether it's to join a forum, whether it's to give a talk at a conference where you're telling these stories, that's how you can break into the PE market and hopefully not work as hard as you've been in investment banking. Does that make sense?
No, I think it does.
I thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Okay. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco. If you would like a workover, I've helped people who are homeless, and I've helped these very high income people like this guy who is an investment banker. I do know a little bit about everything, not a lot about nothing, but I can usually know enough to help you. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, can you hear me?
I hear you beautifully.
Okay. I am calling because I have been in commission-only sales.
Oh, you're the person who called this before. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, great. You sound perfect now. Thank you.
And I make a six-figure income.
Okay.
Steadily every year.
Right.
But I'm concerned that I'm coming up on 50, and I'm thinking that I want to get into something a little less aggressively competitive.
Okay.
And I used to have a degree in fashion, and I used to be, you know,
You went to FITM, fashion. Yeah, I remember. You went to Fashion Institute of wherever.
Yeah,
Mark.
Oh, we did connect before?
Yeah, no, I heard you, but there was so much wind or whatever you had that
I stopped.
I asked you to close the window or whatever, and you weren't listening. You just kept rolling on with your speech.
Sorry.
Okay, so what were you selling on commission? What were you making six figures doing?
Mobile homes.
Okay. Now, the normal thing that people do, and if you're trying to avoid the commission thing, given that you've done well, now, do you work for Cal Pacific or Seagrin's or, you know, those big places?
No, but we are the biggest mobile home dealer in the area in California.
Okay. Now, you could say, I am sick of mobile homes. It's a sleazy business. Take advantage of poor, you know, blue-collar people who have visions of driving themselves around the country and then never do any of it, and then they lose half their – then they sell it and lose, you know, a fortune. And you can say, I want nothing to do with that industry anymore. Or you could say – no, I would like to be an ethical manager and leader in the field, maybe focus on acquisitions of properties, not selling, finding, you know, because there's so many of those damn RVs and mobile homes that have been bought and are sitting around doing nothing. Do you want to get out of the industry, or do you want to get into management or some niche within the industry, maybe F&I, finance and insurance, whatever it is? Do you want to get out completely, or is there a niche within it that you would like to be in?
Well, I have a real estate agent license as well, but I just need something a little more creative that feeds me personally.
Okay, and sometimes there's two answers to this. One is you could say, okay, I'm going to combine my art degree and my art background, and I am going to become a goddess graphic designer for helping, let's say, taking that your niche would be to take each individual mobile home and do a beautiful job of creating a visual montage of them outside and inside that's going to be gorgeous and help them sell. Or you could say, no, I don't want to, I'm going to be doing freelance, essentially be like a kind of an art agency or a graphic designer to help the major mobile home firms market themselves. Any of that appeal, or you just want to get out of that?
I think I want to get out of that.
Okay. And you mentioned you have a real estate agent. There is a residential real estate agent under every rock. That's just too much of a long shot. I don't believe in suicidal odds. But do you want to be, to use that artist background to do the same thing as I just described, that is creating awesome either still or full motion video of properties, commercial or residential, for real estate agents? And it could include, you know, I hate to see you throw away all those years of experience in the mobile home industry. You know, do you want to work for a real estate agent either, you know, creating, as I said, visuals for those properties or for the real estate agencies overall?
I could think about that. That's not a bad idea.
Okay, what feels good about it? What feels yucky about it?
The good about it is that I'd still have my own schedule like I do now. And the bad about it is I think that most of the people that are in those jobs are like the young interns that are better on social media, and they, you know, the marketing interns.
Yeah, don't focus on your weakness. You're not going to beat them at their game. Beat them at your game. So take, you know, on the right now, your skills are not up to speed. I'm not asking you to be a social media queen, but I'm asking you to get to the level where you could, if I were selling my home, where you would do such an awesome job of portraying it in still and motion video, and maybe there are software now that's specifically designed for visually representing housing that's on the market. Learn that software piece or two. Don't just, you know, don't enter middle age like an old fart saying, well, I'm going to do it my old way when I learned it when I fed them. No. Learn the cool new tools that won't take you forever to learn, and really incorporate both your FITM training, your artistry, and your understanding of basically, you know, you've been selling mobile homes to create wonderfully compelling visual representations of properties so that no intern could begin to do that. And yet you're adding so much value that, for example, if I am a real estate broker, whether it be of mobile homes or otherwise, I care. In the end, I'm about the bottom line. I may want to treat people fairly. And if I say, wow, if I can hire this person, I'm going to have a better selling tool. I'm going to get more listings because this I will provide as part of my 5%. I'm going to provide this amazing visual presentation that's going to help them get a lot of listings. And so they're going to pay you not crapola intern wages, but they'll pay you the good money you deserve. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. You sound almost like disappointed. That does. It's almost like, oh, I was hoping I could foil them. Why are you sounding disappointed?
No. Just that I would... I am trying to figure out if I know anybody that does that career that I can talk to so I can kind of get a feel for how much they are able to earn. And
I wouldn't
like
do that.
I was just thinking. I was not being...
Hold on. Yeah, just because you're talking to one person, that person could fail or succeed. Don't do that. What I would do is I would take a little time to learn at least the basics of some really cool software. Then I would contact a couple of realtors. Talk to the people with the potential to hire you. And see if they would hire you. Now, fortunately, our wonderful KLW listenership is listening to us and has an idea for you. So we're going to put this person on the air, and see what he or she has to say. Come on the air. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's very nice of you to call.
Oh, thanks. I've just been hearing your guest. I had a really great idea, and it's the booming tiny home market, which
right.
are basically like RVs, mobile homes, but way nicer. And very creative and aesthetic, and they have a lot of, if your listeners know, and your listener that you're speaking to, yeah. And I was thinking she'd be great at that, you know, advertising them, talking about them, promoting the features, and getting people into them. And it's different than RV, but it's basically an RV.
There you go. What do you think of that?
I had a lot of interest in that area anyway, so it's actually right up... my alley.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Okay, thank you very much for calling. Thank you both. Thank you both.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, this is today's show is about creativity and innovation, so I've tried to be innovative. I wrote this song and I performed it. I'm going to end today's show with some more innovations. I wrote a short story. I like the short story format, something that in 5 minutes forms a coherent story, and I wrote one again that's related to work, and I'd like to read it to you now, and I should say perform it for you, hopefully not just read it. It's called Worth. Gerald's mother sowed the seeds of her son's inflated self-confidence.
Gerald, you're so smart.
Gerald, you draw so well.
Gerald, you're so handsome.
When a friend of hers asked, "How are you?" her typical answer might be, "Fine, you should see my Gerald's latest drawing." For a long time, other adults reinforced Gerald's high self-esteem. He got mainly A's, great inflated ones. He suppressed thoughts about the B's and the tactfully offered areas for growth. After school, Gerald took art lessons, but his first art tutor was tough on his work, so Gerald's mother replaced him with a more positive tutor whose philosophy was 3 praises for every suggestion. Gerald wouldn't take in the less laudatory messages that the world was giving him. For example, yes, his classmates were polite to him, but he got Valentine's Day cards, mainly from the kids whose parents said,
"Give every child in your class a Valentine."
Teachers paid little attention to Gerald. When he submitted his artwork to even minor local student art contests, he usually got honorable mention or no response. He always managed to not let the world's indifference or negativity to him penetrate. When Gerald applied to 3 art colleges, and all of them admitted him with a scholarship, a 1-year, no renewal guaranteed, few thousand-dollar discount off the $40,000 annual sticker price, Gerald interpreted the admissions and scholarship as validation that I could become a professional artist. Yeah! He never realized that feedback is more credible when based not on people you're paying, like teachers, but the people who'd be paying you, customers, art galleries, and so on. Indeed, in art college, Gerald's instructors bestowed much more praise on him than criticism, and buoyed by that, he stayed the 5 years it took to finish his BFA. Now, with $100,000 in student loans to pay back, plus interest, he tried to sell his art, sending his online portfolio to galleries, and having a booth at art fairs, although the juried ones usually rejected him. Living back with his parents motivated him to lower myself to apply for the aforementioned graphic design jobs. But the best that Gerald could get was some project work, which didn't pay enough and consistently enough to afford his own apartment in San Francisco. So he drove a limo and worked in an art supply store near his art college, selling expensive supplies to other students who dreamed of becoming professional artists, not of being deeply indebted permanent entry-level workers. Gerald's romantic endeavors were equally lackluster. He dated, but the most desirable relationships never lasted. His longest one was with Brandy, who has, to use his words, lots of issues. For a long time, he believed he deserved better, but finally returned to Brandy and married her. At age 40, Gerald still believed, "I'm exceptional, as is." Then he read a high school graduation speech by preeminent biographer David McCulloch. Here are the key excerpts, and this really is excerpts from McCulloch's high school graduation speech. "None of you is special. You're not special. You're not exceptional. Contrary to what your soccer trophy suggests, your glowing seventh-grade report card, despite every assurance of that nice Mr. Rogers and your batty Aunt Sylvia, you're nothing special. Yes, you've been pampered, cosseted, doted upon, helmeted, bubble-wrapped. Yes, capable adults with other things to do have held you, kissed you, fed you, wiped your mouth, wiped your bottom, trained you, taught you, tutored you, coached you, listened to you, counseled you, encouraged you, consoled you, and encouraged you yet again. You've been nudged, cajoled, wheedled, and implored. You've been feted and fawned over and called sweetie pie. Yes, you have. And certainly, we've been to your games, your plays, your recitals, your science fairs. And now, you've conquered high school. And indisputably, here we've all gathered for you. But do not get the idea you're anything special, because you're not. Across the country, no fewer than 3.2 million seniors are graduating about now from more than 37,000 high schools. That's 37,000 valedictorians, that's 37,000 class presidents, 92,000 harmonizing altos, 340,000 swaggering jocks, 2,185,967 pairs of Uggs. But Dave, you cry. Walt Whitman tells me, I'm my own version of perfect. Epictetus tells us, I have the spark of Zeus. And I don't disagree. So that makes 6.8 billion examples of perfection, 6.8 billion sparks of Zeus. The fulfilling life, the distinctive life, the relevant life is an achievement, not something that'll fall into your lap because you're a nice person or mommy ordered it from the caterer. Gerald's eyes welled up, but then he turned to his easel. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, the excellent David Latulippe, for his creative ideas throughout this show and before, and of course, to all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers on callers, and I'll talk with Tolga Kurtoglu. I'm sure I bow. Kurtoglu. He is the CEO of the legendary Bay Area think tank, Xerox PARC. We'll talk about the present and the future of technology and its impact on jobs. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
For the archive of Dr. Marty Nemko's articles, information on his 8 books, including the just-published second edition of his book, The Best of Marty Nemko, plus how you can consult privately with Marty, go to martynemko.com. That's Marty, N-E-M-K-O.com. And join Marty again next Sunday morning at 11 for Work with Marty Nemko, here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.
Results with the Sifter Boy Deluxe, you had to first lug the fake pigs off to one side. Being on auto, the pigs would continue grunting as you lugged them, which might look funny if you happen to be holding that particular pig wrong.
Hi, I'm Josh Ratner. I'm excited to be hosting this week's Selected Shorts from PRI, Public Radio International.
Selected Shorts this afternoon at 5. You can help a San Francisco young person build a future by connecting them with real-world work experience. Students from high schools across the city are looking for summer internships in areas including law, hospitality, and health sciences. Your company or organization can make a difference. To find out how, just go to our website, www.kalw.org, where Le Show is next, followed at 1 by This American Life. The time is 12 noon.
Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, we learned this week there's so much leaking, of course. Richard Nixon would be calling 8 plumbers right now because everything in Washington is leaking in real time. Don't even have to. The guys who write the books after, you know, an administration is done, I don't know what they're going to do because we know it all now already. For example, we learned this week in some leaked reporting or reporting based on leaks. The reporting wasn't leaked. See what I mean? That when President Trump was meeting with German Prime Minister Angela Merkel just a few days